Welcome to another LoveRugbyLeague.com podcast. My name's Dave Parkinson. I'm joined by Adrian Jackson, and we are now talking Super League.
It's original, but we just love talking on podcasts.
We do. You can't shut us up. We're like the equivalent of Wogan.
Without the Irish accent.
To be sure. Yeah, exactly. Without the Irish accent, it was hardly Brian Carney, was it?
Plenty to talk about during this podcast about Super League, all about the action in round two, the action coming up in round three. We've got a World Club Challenge to talk about. And what about that late postponement of Catalan Dragons versus Hull FC? It's really rough for the few early bird feathers.
Oh, I like what you did there. Controversial. Catalan Dragons, but I think it was Sean McRae who was breathing fire. He's trying to top me on the puns, like. Perhaps not. But no, there is a serious point there, isn't there? I mean, there was a lot of Hull fans who decided to make the trip over. Now, normally, you'd lap it up, wouldn't you? You know, a few days in the south of France going to watch a little bit of rugby.
Yeah, of course, sure. The North, if the game was called off, if you're a fan out there, you wouldn't be too bothered, because if you're in the midst of summer, it's heat wave, it's 90 to 100 degrees, so you just get your shorts and t-shirts on and hit the bars at Perpignan. But when it's that cold, like it was last weekend, where can you go?
Well, you can't go and put your shorts on, can you, and have a go in the pool, because you might end up freezing in there. But I do take your point. I mean, Perpignan's a lovely place, but I'd imagine if it's cold or wet, it's no more fun than being in Wigan.
I think it's something the RFL need to look at, don't they, really? It's all right, it's not that often we get frost in the south of France. Has it ever happened? I'm not too sure, but if it has, it's very rare. So I think what the RFL need to do in future seasons, where we always seem to be kicking off earlier and earlier in the midst of the winter season, for a summer game, which I think is ridiculous, by the way, but if we're going to continue to kick off in the start of February, maybe should have something in place for a Catalan game where they call it off at least 4 days beforehand or a week.
I think the other point as well is that with a lot of these, dare I say it by talking about the other code, but...
Or should they have undersole heating?
That's a really expensive suggestion.
Play on the beach.
Play on the beach. I mean, it's cold. You're still going to get cold, aren't you? It's still going to be freezing.
You can still play. You play on the high pitch. That's just like a beach.
No, that's just a description. Some players were giving it last week. But having said that, there is a point that you're making there. I'm trying to think of what it is, but there is a point that you're making there. The main one, as far as I'm concerned, is that when you look, I'm going to just mention the dark side of rugby union. They've got the Heineken Cup.
Strike me down.
I know. But they've got the Heineken Cup, and every team in that has to name an alternate venue. So, if they can't play it for whatever reason at the first venue, they can put the game on at the second venue the day after. Now, I know certainly Sale, for example, they have named Lee Sports Village as the second setting for that, because they know that it's underground heating and what have you. So you do perhaps have a point. I wonder how many of these pitches over in France actually do have undersoil heating, and are there any which could double up as a secondary home venue for the Catalan Dragons?
I mean, is there a French football team near Perpignan in the top league that might have undersoil heating they can use?
I don't know about undersoil heating, but I do know that the Catalan Dragons have switched games to Marseille over the last couple of seasons. I think Wigan have played there a couple of times. So that's obviously a venue which ticks all the boxes for them, shall we say. But I just think it's something that the league needs to look at, don't they?
Now, bearing in mind we're meant to be in a financial grip of having no money, us as general fans of the sport we love, for the whole fans to spend a load of money to go out there and not see the actual heroes play, there must have been spitting in the beer.
It's atrocious, really, isn't it, when you look at it? I just think that they need to decide a lot sooner to save people from going. I mean, a lot of people might have decided, well, I'll book me tickets anyway. I'm going to go for a few days away. But you would do, yeah. I mean, that's the whole reason that you've got over there, isn't it? And it's something that they do need to look at.
I say it is probably a rarity. It might never happen again, but I think the RFL needs to have something in place with the Catalan Dragons to make sure it doesn't happen again.
You get the general idea of the stuff that we talk about on Talking Super League. Coming up, Adrian Jackson. Everton, Chelsea with Stefan Ratchford, who describes his first senior try.
Great try as well.
That first senior try for Warrington as well, having said that. And Steve Manning, our resident expert interviewer, catches up with Sean O'Loughlin in the wake of a victory for Wigan against Leeds.
You mentioned Stefan Ratchford's try. I tell you what, two of the tries Warrington scored against the London Broncos in round two of the Super League. Probably worthy of a try of the season, but I'm not sure which one's the best. Ratchford or Atkins, let's have a fight about it.
We're going to be doing a Harry Hill fight scene here.
No, I'm not. Let's give you the results from round two, shall we? Casper Tigers 12, Bradford Bulls 20, Huddersfield Giants 66, Midlands Vikings 6, St. Helens 38, Suffolk City Reds 10, Wexford Trinity Wildcats 10, Hokkinson Rovers 22, Warrington 50, London Broncos 10, Wigan Warriors 20, Leeds Rhinos 6, and in round two we said hello to Lantree Park.
And what a venue. What a performance as well in the second half from St. Helens. In the first half, Salford looked well capable of causing what would have been the biggest party poop of all time, didn't they? You know, I mean, St. Helens kicked it off with so many of their former greats all greasing the pitch for one final time. Even the great Tom Van Vollenhoven.
And he's small, but my word, he was fast.
He was. He was. He could certainly run fast.
We get away for witness.
But we had the pleasure of going there in pre-season, didn't we, when Widnes Vikings were the visitors for the official first game there at Lantree Park. What a venue.
It is a great venue, and it's great to see 15,500 there, wasn't it? Because I tell you what, they wouldn't have got that many at Naughty Road for a visit of Salford City Reds.
Definitely not. But like I was saying, I think Salford could come out of that game and take a lot of credit from it and take a lot of positives into the next game.
Funny enough, I think Phil Vivas has got a bit of trouble on his hands. There's a few concerns concerning Salford City Reds. He's got some outstanding individuals in the back line, so you certainly know where the try line is and can create some great attacking play. The problem that I think with Salford City Reds is they're a bit weak in that pack and they haven't got anyone that can dominate the middle of the field. They seem to be allowing the opposition to get to grips with them in the middle of the field and they can't cope with it. For my opinion, they haven't replaced Ray Cashman.
That's a pretty good shout, that, to be honest. You were expecting me to argue with you there, weren't you? But I think you can, like, you are right with what you've said, but I saw that game on Friday night as being almost a repeat of Widnes against Wakefield in the opening round, because it was a case of Salford putting all the play in the first half, having a lot of the position and not really being able to get over the try line. They only breached that St. Helens defence twice, didn't they, through Gibson and Broughton, and that really came back to bite them on the backside, to be honest.
Well, for the third game in the road, including the friendly against Widnes, St. Helens seemed to be in the mood to give the opposition a 10 or 12 point start, and they say, okay, we're going to start playing now. But if they do that against a quality team like a Warrington, Leeds or Wigan, they're not going to be able to have that opportunity.
Again, I'm agreeing with you. Where's it going wrong tonight? I should be in complete disagreement, shouldn't I? But I do think, though, that St. Helens, they did get the rub of the green with a couple of the decisions. I thought particularly there was a try there for Soliola, which just wouldn't have stood at any other time. He went over the line, seemed to have about four players on him, and it was ruled that he touched the ball down, but I was of the opinion that nobody could have made a decision there. We had to have the margin meter on it, I think.
Oh, don't get me talking about the margin meter. That's more frustrating than what I hear in it, Steve or Neddy.
I think that we should have our own little margin meter on this show. Well, I think we should call it the margarine eater. What do you reckon? Tweet us at Margarine Eater. No, I'm only kidding. But, St. Helens, great opening night it turned out for them. A couple of, shall we say, more respected journalists than you and I, Adrian, were pointing at Bradford Bulls really struggling this season. They go away from home, they go to Castleford, who have seemingly strengthened in the off-season, and they beat them by 20 points to 12, like 12 points to nil at half-time as well. That's a great result for Bradford.
Nick Potter's obviously done his homework ahead of that game, hasn't he? And whatever he said in the preparation for that game, I think he needs to bottle it and use it every week, because it was all doom and gloom after round one. Everyone was tipping them to beat the Wooden Spoonies. But they turned it around. Castleford, he wouldn't be too happy with that, would he? They had a great victory in round one and just couldn't back it up at home.
So 20 points to 12 it was. Burgess, Carney and Sammet, the try scorers for Bradford. Luke Gale kicking 4 goals. And for Castleford, Griffin and Owen touching down with Dixon kicking 2 goals. Encouraging attendance, having said that, at, what's it called these days? It's called the Jungle. It's Weldon Road, isn't it? That's what we know it as.
Well, that's Weldon Road.
Well, I'm just trying to think what the Probe's Coliseum. Is it the Probe's Coliseum? I really don't know. We've given a free appetizer.
The Coliseum.
The Coliseum there at Castleford. It's nearly as old as the Coliseum. Anyway.
It's never changed. Anyway, it still looks like Weldon Road.
Yeah. Let's call it Weldon Road. In fact, I think we've lost it somewhere around here. Yeah. And a really encouraging crowd. Just over 8,000. They can really look at building on that over the course of the season, can't they?
I'm sure they can, but I'm sure a lot of Bradford fans have gone over the numbers as well to support the team despite that first round defeat.
One of the other games, as far as I'm concerned, that I was interested in seeing how it would go would be Wakefield. Would they be able to keep on a winning run after beating Widnes in round one? They took on Hull Kingston Rovers, and the answer was the Rovers returned. They got their own back, and they won 22-10.
Again, like Mick Potter, whatever, Craig Sandercock said to his charges ahead of that game, he needs to bottle it and use it week in, week out. Because again, Hawkins and Rovers suffered a disappointing defeat in round one. It was all doom and gloom, wasn't it? Even some fans say, is Craig Sandercock the man for the job? But he's proved with that victory against Wakefield that Hawkins and Rovers are up to the task.
Rovers led by 12 points to 10 at half time, and in the second half extended their advantage. Paya, Mika, Lovegrove and Hodgson were the scorers, with Dobson kicking 2 goals and Hall kicking 1. Wakefield replied with tries through Raleigh and Kikane, with John kicking 1 goal. Now, Raleigh, he's not been noted as a try scorer throughout his career. First 2 games of Super League, 2 tries for him. It's pretty good going that for a prop. It certainly gets him off the naked run there, doesn't it?
Yeah, not really renowned for scoring tries, is he, Andy Raleigh? It's good to see him find his way over that whitewash. He must have got a nosebleed or something. That's all I can think of. Looking at the surnames of Paya and Mika, put them two together, they sound like a pop singer from China.
It do. Either that or a delicacy from Wigan, you never know. Mika Paya.
And we mentioned Bradford Bulls probably being tipped as a wooden spoonist by some journalists within the world of rugby league. Another hot favourite to take that role was Widnes Vikings. Now they were going up against a Huddersfield Giants team that had a great victory against Wigan Warriors in round one. Widnes, they were competitive against Wakefield, but they were disappointed to have lost their opening game back in the Super League. Always going to be a big test for them, and the scoreline suggests it was a horrid day at the office for them.
Yeah, 34-0 to Huddersfield Giants at half time. And they just built and built and built on that, and eventually finished Huddersfield Giants 66, Widnes 6, all the sixes. And Dennis Betts would have thought he was in hell for that game, wouldn't he?
12 tries scored in total for Huddersfield Giants. 4 of them scored by Leroy Cudshaw. Not just happy with a hat-trick, he wanted to go and get an extra one and beat 4 for the day. And he's not done his reputation at any harm whatsoever with those 4 tries. And also a hat-trick for young Luke Georgie. They've done his dad proud.
His dad, the former Halifax winger.
And Widnes winger as well.
Widnes winger as well. Great name of the old days. And I think he's making his way in the refereeing stakes there, isn't he, Wilf? But looking at it, Luke George has done fantastically well. And you could say, Huddersfield Giants, they were flying with wings, weren't they? They actually scored 7 tries from the men on the flanks, which is just great to see. And certainly plenty of exciting play there at the Gal Farm.
I'm impressed with your maths there, by the way, but yeah, Huddersfield getting off to a great start. If Widnes were going to do anything against Huddersfield, you've got to get off to a good start. I mean, you've got to be able to control the big six that they always have at the Gal Farm Stadium. Widnes failed to do either of them, did they? Robinson racing over after 3 minutes, Cudshaw, he scored a hat-trick inside 12 minutes, and Widnes were really up against it after 25 minutes. Half-time, it would have been disappointed. Second half, it would have been about damage limitation. But it just never happened. Huddersfield were in a mood for a ramp in the scoreline, weren't they?
Thankfully, though, Paddy Flynn did score his first try in Super League, but it was just like a speed bump, really, wasn't it? They really did pile on the points. I noticed that former Widnes player Scott Griggs got himself on the scoreboard as well in the first half. But in the second half, there were tries from Chan on Wardle, Eden getting on the act, and Brough being the man on target with 9 goals from 12 attempts.
Another impressive attendance at the Gal Farm for round 2 of the Super League as well. 8,869, and normally we get about 4,000.
That was about three seasons ago.
It doesn't matter.
Last year, they were up to about 7,000, but they have built impressively on that. And I think a lot of that would have been boosted by a big travelling army of Widnes fans. And it is going to be interesting to see whether those travelling army of Widnes fans will stick with the side if they're going to be taking pummelings like that. Certainly, even the most ardent of Vikings fans must be loud looking at that squad and thinking, how many wins can we manage in Super League this year?
Yeah, I suppose a disappointing thing for Dennis Burns' boys is the fact that they've always said it's all about being competitive and progressing as the games come along, and 66-6 does suggest that with this we're not competitive, so they need to draw a line on that, forget all about it and concentrate on the next big game against Salford City Reds. The game at the weekend saw a repeat of last year's Champs Cup final. That was Wigan Warriors against Leeds Rhinos, and Wigan Warriors bouncing back to win in style.
I thought this was a really impressive performance from Wigan. They got amongst Leeds early on, didn't they, and really did bully them. Now, for me, I thought that this game should have been refereed by somebody who was a bit stronger than Thierry Alibert. I mean, don't get me wrong, third referee is our Mr. Alibert.
Fish.
So there was something fishy in that game. Certainly we saw his decisions, but not our Mr. Ali Bear was actually doing quite well up until about 3 minutes into the game, where he just allowed a lot of niggle to take place. So there was a lot of undercurrent in that game, a lot of feeling. There was stuff being said by both sides, and the referee didn't clamp down on it, and it just ended up boiling over. That, to be honest, served well in Wigan's favour. We saw Josh Charnley really come of age as a Super League winger. He scored his first hat-trick for Wigan, and to be fair, he could have been four. He had an early try disallowed as a result of the video ref because of an obstruction, which, to be honest, had it been scored anywhere else in Super League this weekend, the try would have stood.
That just shows you that what we need in Super League is a bit of consistency, because you can't give a decision in favour once in 1 week and then reverse that decision in the next match.
This could get very expensive for Super League. You're asking for undersoil heating at grounds and video referees at every game.
So it's Tony Smith. He's not asking for undersoil heating, he's after video referees at every game.
I hope he's going to put his hand in his pocket.
And I'm sure Tony Smith can afford it. If he's good enough for Tony Smith to ask for it, why can't I?
You're not Tony Smith, Mr.
No, just looking at the Wigan game, though, they're taking hatchet for Josh Charlie. He'll get a lot of confidence from that. He'll be looking to kick on and improve his reputation and basically try and get a starting spec in that team on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think he's starting to do that. I mean, Sean Wayne has certainly pinned his hopes on some of the younger players that he's got at his disposal. He's told Darryl Goulding that basically the jersey is his to lose in the centres. And I think he's virtually done the same for Charnley, but to be fair, you're not going to be losing your shirt after scoring a hat-trick, are you? I mean, Pat Richards on the other wing had a quiet game by his standards, but still was able to come up with four goals. Leeds tried hard right till the end. Darryl Griffin scoring his first try for the club since his close-season move. And they never gave up. They'll certainly be of the opinion that they can put it behind them when they take on Manly in the World Cup Challenge.
Not a perfect preparation for them to go into the World Cup Challenge on the back of a defeat. Leeds Rhinos never really hit the heights, did they?
They didn't, and I think it was down to that start, really, and the fact that the game wasn't really officiated in a very strict manner like you might have expected. I know you criticised Steve Ganson last week for his performance in Hull, but by all cases, he was impressive in the game between Huddersfield and Widnes. Should he not really have been put on this Wigan and Leeds game?
That's for the RFL's side, my mate.
He's got splinters here as our agent. Sitting on the fence is his speciality.
Now, you mentioned the fact is what was going on between the Wigan and Leeds Rhinos outfits on the Saturday night game in round two of Super League, and the tactics of London Broncos against Warrington at the Halliwell Jones the following day frustrated everyone who was wearing primrose and blue. They tried the damnedest to slow the game down, and James Child just letting fair play continue.
So he was another weak referee in Super League, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
That's fair enough, then. You know what I mean? James Child got more than enough criticism last year at Super League level. He was new boy on the block, wasn't he, I think, last season in Super League.
To be fair, though, he did take the frustration and the criticism from the home fans on board, because he penalised London Broncos something chronic in that second half. I think he gave something like 3 penalties in the space of a minute in favour of Warrington.
Well, I'm just looking at the stats from the game, and he actually gave 18 penalties. That he was blowing the pee out of the whistle, wasn't he?
Yeah, a lot of it go by as well, because London were really trying the hardest to frustrate Warrington around the play of the ball by slowing it down, leaning on needlessly, holding on for as long as they could.
They had a good start to the game, though, didn't they? London Broncos scored first through Waite.
Seems like Warrington had that, to be honest. The London Broncos did have a good start. Warrington slow up the block, he'll admit that, to be honest. Waite went in for a real classy try. He turned Stephen Ratchford round, no problem, on the right boot, and he was gone through the gap. Well taken try by him. But once Warrington got level through Chris Bridge, it was one-way traffic.
He was hoping that it wouldn't reach a score of epic proportions like last season. They had a good go at it, though, didn't they, Warrington, in the second half? They led 22-10 at the break, and certainly did put the points away in the second half.
They scored plenty of tries as well. Chris Pitch got 2, Joel Manahan got 2, Ryan Atkins got 2, Stephen Ratchford raced over for his first try, then Lee Brays chipped in with 2 tries at the end of it. Good to see Lee Brays back wearing the primrose and blue after his discipline problems in the game against Hull FC. But 2 of the tries were absolutely outstanding. Ryan Atkins trying the first half is just spectacular. He started it, swapped a few passes with a couple of his teammates, and he was on the end of the move as well. Literally went the full length of the field to touch down and get the try in the first half. And Stephen Ratchford's try was pretty similar. Ratchford started it on his own 20-metre line in that second half. Swapped passes with Reece Evans, and Reece Evans showed a lot of maturity to pop the ball back on the inside, and somehow Ratchford got on the end of it and had a bit of energy left to race away from the London Broncos defence and touch down. So 2 cracking efforts that were worth the admittance fee alone.
Speaking of Ratchford, Adrian caught up with him and actually asked him what it was like to score that try and actually describe it.
You know, we wasn't unhappy with what we've done, but we knew that we could be better. And like I said, we come out the second half and showed that, you know, the first half wasn't our greatest performance. And, you know, like I said, we was a lot better in the second half.
Got to ask you, talk you through your try.
Yeah, I just remember the ball going up, and I think Ryan Atkins did quite well. He ran a bit of the kick pressure off, and you know, there was a bit of a gap, and give it to Reece Evans. I thought he was going to go the length, and you know, just push back up on his inside, and he gave me a nice little flick pass back inside, and I thought I was going to die when I was about 20 metres out, but yeah, I got there in the end.
Well, last week the Primrose and Blue fans started at standoff. Today, fullback, how did you feel you went?
Yeah, it was a first run out at fullback in a while. You know, I think I've only played there a handful of times before, but yeah, it was good to get a run out. It's a lot easier, you know, when you've got players like Brazy and Richie, you know, running off them, and you know, like Benny Westwood attracts a lot of players, so it gives you that bit of extra space. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Enjoyed it back there, and you know, I just have to wait and see what the future holds, really.
Win the draw already. What kind of mark has this set for the rest of the tournament?
Yeah, I think you know, there's a couple of teams started well. Obviously, Wigan bounced back last night. Huddersfield have had a couple of big wins, and you know, Saints have had 2 wins as well. So we know that, you know, the usual teams are going to be there. So obviously, we didn't get off to the greatest start last week with a draw at Hull, but like I said, we bounced back today with a good win, and you know, we're only going to get better as the season goes on.
To be honest with you, he still sounded tired from his efforts.
Well, it sounded like a tremendous try. In fact, he should come and sit with some of these commentators. He'd probably do a better job on Sky describing the tries.
Yeah, it was a great try. Good effort from Morrison. Good effort from London Broncos. They never give up, really. He kept on plugging away to try and get a try in that second half. Because their tries through Witt and Robinson only came in the first half. Robinson, that was his only first touch in that first half. That shows you how much domination Warrington had of the actual possession during that game. London Broncos, they were trying desperately to contain Warrington's attack, slowing the ball down. When they did have the ball, it was just one man rugby who was trying to power the way up the middle. And when you got a pack the size of Warrington's in the likes of Gareth Carver, you've got Trent Waterhouse in there as well, who's a big unit for Warrington this year, and Adrian Morley and Ben Westwood. It's difficult to break down and make him runs.
Do you think part of that comes down to that one-man rugby, though, of the fact that they've been blown off the park and they're looking to try and build a little bit of confidence just by doing the basics right?
I think it means that game aware of what happened last year, and they're probably hoping history wouldn't repeat myself, no, Warrington, give it a go. They'd be happy with the 50 points they scored, don't get me wrong. But London Broncos, they can take a little bit away from it, but not much.
I'm just looking at that London Broncos team, and 10 of the starting 13 players were of non-English origin. Now, call me a cynic.
Are you trying to say they ripped up the overseas rule and just signed anybody?
Yeah, call me a cynic, but weren't they meant to be actually reducing the overseas players?
Well, that was the plan a few years ago, wasn't it?
You know, because I'm struggling. I mean, you look at it as well, they had Julian Rinaldi on the bench as well, he's a Frenchman. So 11 of their 17-man squad could not represent England. That's a worry for me in Super League.
What's the point of having a team in Super League in London when London are meant to be down there spreading the gospel around the capital, and somehow, with the money they're getting from the NFL, they're meant to be able to produce their own players out of London-based players to be able to wear the famous clothes of London Broncos. Your stats through yesterday's lineup suggest it's not happening.
No, it isn't. I mean, they put a lot of faith in some of the youngsters knocking around London last season, didn't they? And they had a predominantly English-based team, which, to be fair, did not reach many hairy heights over the course of the season. I think you described it as reaching the peak after round three, didn't you, or round four. But it's definitely a worry, that. And although I'm glad to see them competing, it almost seems like a false dawn again in some respects. I'm not talking about Luke at fullback.
Now, I think when you look at the Broncos, everyone thought with the game and the performance they produced against St. Helens, it's something to build on, but that seems to have unravelled in one visit to the Halliwell Jones already.
To be fair, I think there's a number of sides who will struggle, though, to contain some of that excellent back play that Warrington can just produce, because, let's face it, it can be a magic attacking side, can't they, with Libri as pulling the strings. Let's get a little bit more reaction. Here's Steve Manning having a chat with Wigan Warriors captain Sean O'Loughlin.
Oh, Sean O'Loughlin, the Wigan Warriors captain. A little bit more like it this weekend.
Yeah, it was good to get back to winning ways, especially at home. It was disappointing last week, the performance put in, and yeah, just putting a pretty solid performance in was good for the confidence as well going into the rest of the season.
The game itself was one of those where really the foundations under the game itself was one of the forwards, and you were among them.
It was a very tough battle around the middle. I think our front rows, our rocker Mickey Mack, and when Tommy went there as well, it was outstanding, and the back rows, and they got through some tough work. But yeah, the forward did lay some pretty good platforms down, some foundations, and then the backs kind of scored the points. It was a good team performance really. But yeah, there was a lot of hard work done around the middle, especially Mickey Mack. He was outstanding tonight.
And the side itself, you're 12-0 up at half time, and then you got the penalty, and perhaps that proved crucial when they were playing catch up later on.
Yeah, we always kept our noses just in front really, and they did have to throw the ball about probably a little bit more than they would have wanted to see, especially the closing 10-15 minutes of the game. They were having to chase it a little bit, but we still hung in there. They broke us a couple of times, but I think our scramble and our desire to work for each other was credit to the boys. And yeah, that never say die attitude and working for each other was there, and which was probably questioned a little bit last week. So it was good to get back into doing that.
The middle, as Sean calls them, are always, unfortunately at times, going to be the unsung heroes, and the backs take the plaudits. And Josh Charnley, I suppose, got a hat trick against the champions, so he's going to be in the spotlight this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. Charnley is a transcoring machine at the minute. His last year and the way he started this year, he's always going to do that for us. And you need them people in your team. You need them, and they do get the highlights. But I think the forwards don't mind that. They know what their job's about, and they know they're not going to get too many plaudits. But yeah, when you've got guys like China scoring free tries, can't say that. When you've got guys like China scoring free tries, it's for credit to them. He took his chance as well.
And finally, you've got Bradford Bulls next week. It's not going to be easy, especially with like this weather. And you've got to build on this game now, haven't you?
Yeah, we set some standards today. Probably increased them on last week, and yeah, especially early on in the season, it's. You're still probably finding your feet a little bit. You're still finding your fitness level. So, yeah, it's probably just about building on it again, like you say, and making sure we keep stepping forward and we keep improving.
Wigan captain Sean O'Loughlin, and I'm sure that he'll have been happy with being able to put one over Leeds there.
I'm sure you would have, and they'd be happy to get back to winning ways, having lost that to Huddersfield. That's just letting the fans know that Wigan are not past the best and they're up for the challenge in 2012. And interesting about Sean O'Loughlin is the fact of how long he's been around again. He still is only 28 years of age.
Yeah, he's playing really well at the moment. He's always been one of those players that I've always thought he's a real workhorse, but he's actually got a lot of skill to his game. There was one of the breaks that he made, which led to a Charlie try, and it was just so classy the way that he cut through the defence and then fed the ball out. He was standoff-like. Fantastic.
He's had his fair share of injuries. I'm just wondering, maybe they've helped him prolong his career, maybe?
Yeah, possibly. I mean,
he seems a lot fresher than most 28, 29-year-old players.
He looks in good nick, doesn't he? You know, to be honest, I mean, let's face it. I think you're right. I'm agreeing with you far too much on this podcast, Adrian. It is no good.
I bet Sean O'Loughlin's got a testimonial this year as well.
You are. He's got a shirt out at the moment. You've been reading, haven't you? You've been doing some research.
No, I have not.
He's got a special testimonial shirt that is for sale. It's a classy number as well. Black and white with red trimming.
I'm on the mention of testimonials, Matt, so I'll mention Adrian Morley. He's got a 3-month testimonial starting. I think it's in March for Adrian Morley, 3-month one for his services to Rugby League. And log on to his most testimonial website to get details of the events he's got lined up.
So you can actually put that into Google, can you? Most testimonial.
Yeah, on Twitter.
On Twitter, right. Follow Most on Twitter. Most testimonial.
Next up in Super League, it's round three. There's some intriguing fixtures for round three. Here they are now. Bradford Bulls versus Wigan Warriors. Hull FC versus London Broncos. Hull Kingston Rovers versus St Helens. Widnes Vikings versus Salford City Reds. Huddersfield Giants take on Warrington Wolves. Castline Dragons versus Castleford Tigers. I suppose the pick of the fixtures for round three is going to be that cracking game at the Gow Farm. Giants versus the Wolves.
Sounds like something from a fairy tale, doesn't it? It could be a fairy tale game, couldn't it, as well?
I mean, I think there'd be a bit more beef about it than the fairy tale.
That's a repeat as well of the 2009 Challenge Cup final as well between those two teams. Always a good fixture and one to look out for. There has been some really good clashes between those two sides down there. The big question on my lips, however, is will Catalan Dragons actually get their game on with Castleford Tigers?
Now, if you look at the weather reports for the UK, it looks like we're going to be in double figures temperature-wise, so I don't see there being a problem for Catalan Dragons this time around against the Tigers. I'm sure the Tigers fans have had their fingers crossed that they're not going to have a wasted weekend. They've not seen the boys run out there like Hull FC fans had the week before.
I wonder what we'll be saying come next podcast when we're discussing what went on there. I think the pressure's on Ian Millwall, to be honest, a little bit. He slipped up at home against Bradford, who haven't been fancied in some circles for what they're going to do this season. Catalan Dragons looked extremely effective in their opening game of the season. Can they follow that? Will this postponement end up playing against them? I guess we'll find out next week.
Classy team, Catalan Dragons, and they're even more difficult to play at home, aren't they? And Castleford won't fancy that journey at all. So Bradford Bulls, the challenge for them is can they back up that victory against Castleford Tigers?
Yeah, they're playing against Wigan Warriors at the weekend over there at the Oddsall Bowl, and certainly looking at it, they could be fancying the chances there, actually. I don't know quite how they'll be feeling. I think certainly if they can get amongst Wigan early on and perhaps slow them down, they could get a lot closer than people expect.
Now, Hull FC, they're letting force break with the postponement of the game against Castleford Dragons. Now, they're going into the game against London Broncos still confident from that draw from round one against Warrington Wolves, and the Broncos, they'll be low in confidence, won't they?
I think that Hull will be looking at this and thinking, this could be an easy 2 points for us. But having said that, they have got to concentrate fully on the task in hand. We've mentioned already about the Australian influence amongst the London Bronco lineup, and that will certainly stand them in good stead. And they'll add a little bit of something. They'll play slightly differently to perhaps how Hull FC were looking forward to. But I would still tip Hull FC to come out with an ultimately comfortable victory.
Same applies to Hawkins and Rovers, really, isn't it? They'll be looking for a comfortable victory against St Helens, but against St Helens, that is never the case.
Definitely not, no. I mean, St Helens have some fantastic personnel, don't they? I mean, James Roby was head of all the stats again last weekend. He just put so much into his game, and I can't see anything but a St Helens victory there on Humberside, to be honest.
East Yorkshire. Believe you me, Dave, if you went up there and said they're in Humberside rather than East Yorkshire, they're probably in the River Humber.
But they're at the side of the River Humber, though, aren't they? Is that not Humberside?
was in the '80s, but not anymore.
Well, in order not to upset our whole massive out there, I will say East Yorkshire, but I will upset them because I'm tipping a St Helens win.
Well, another game we haven't mentioned is Widders versus Salford City Reds, and these are two teams that are looking for a victory to get some much needed confidence in place.
I think this could be a close one. I know that you're looking forward to it, aren't you? You're going to be there on Sunday. Which way am I going to tip? I'm actually going to tip Salford. I think they've got too much for Widnes.
You're walking home now, you know what?
I'm sorry, I've just got to go where the heart is, mate.
I honestly think this will be Widnes' first win of the season. I think Salford have got big problems in the fact that it seems to be a bit weak in the park. This is a good opportunity for Widnes to exert some real Vikings power on the City Reds.
It could be, but I don't know. I still fancy Salford on that. With what I've seen of Salford in the opening 2 weeks of Super League, when they spread that ball wide, they're going to trouble anybody. They're going to score points. And I don't think Widnes have got the pace in the back line to cope with the fast wingers and centres that Salford have.
No, Salford City Reds struggled on the ice pitch at the Willows in the first round of the Super League. I think they might struggle to adapt to the conditions of the high pitch.
It's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? I'm betting that Matty Ashes were skins for this game, to be honest, because he'll have been already cut to ribbons from that opening day at the Salford Community Stadium. But you're looking at it, and I am still tipping Salford. I can't see past them winning. I know you'd like me to tip the other way, but I just can't see Dennis Betts being able to fashion a victory there.
That's the Super League fixtures. Don't we ever forget about Leeds, or Leeds fans do calm down a little minute, because Leeds are not playing in Super League this weekend. They've got the chance to be crowned World Club Challenge champions for 2012. It's not just any old World Club Challenge game that's happening in Leeds on Friday. It's the Heinz Big Soup World Club Challenge. I wonder if they're giving out free tins of soup or cups of soup if you went in the turnstile.
We'll have to get down there, won't we? I'm
really only this chicken soup or go.
I'm running a bit short of vegetable, and I tell you what, if they're giving out chicken, I will get you some. How's that, mate?
Yeah, it's the annual showdown between the Super League champions of being Leeds Rhinos from last season against the champions from Australia. It's Manly Sea Eagles who come to town.
Should be a fascinating game. Former Leeds assistant coach and player Willie Poaching spoke with Adrian about the forthcoming World Cup Challenge.
Coming up this week in the World of Rugby League, it's the World Cup Challenge between Leeds Rhinos and the Manly Sea Eagles, the usual showdown between the winners of Super League and the winners of the NRL. Now, one guy alongside me who's played in the World Cup Challenge and knows how to win one is Willie Poaching. And Willie, your former club in there again, Leeds Rhinos, how do you feel it's going to go against the Manly Sea Eagles this time round?
Yeah, it's an exciting time. You know, I know the Leeds players will be really excited to try and get some more silverware, and it's a fantastic start to the season. And you know, when you play in the World Club Challenge, it's a big focus of your pre-season. You know, I know people are trying to get ready for the Super League season coming ahead, but when you've got a big game like this against, you know, the Australian champions, it becomes a big focus, and it's something that you really want to have a good go at. And I know the Leeds players will be feeling like that at the moment. They'll give it a good shout, and you know, they're a good representation of Super League, and I hope for the Super League's sake again that the English team does us proud and, you know, brings home some silver, and it gives a lot of credit and credence to the Super League competition. You know, it just shows and it gives some confidence to all the players that the standard we're playing is a good one.
Now, looking at the challenge from down under, it's Manly Sea Eagles. What are they like as a team?
Yeah, brilliant. You know, I think them and Melbourne have been the pace setters for a long time now in their competition. They've set a really high benchmark, and you know, there was a little bit of turmoil after the grand final with the coach leaving and some of the backroom staff. I think they've got the squad still together, and that's a big important part of it. They've got some brilliant players, especially the Stewart brothers and Daly Cherry Evans, who've got some international experience in the Four Nations. They'll come over here full of confidence as well. The weather might be a factor for them. They're only giving themselves a week in order to prepare for this, and there may be a case of jet lag, but I'm sure in the same case as Leeds, when, you know, their focus was on this throughout the course of their preseason, that wouldn't have been too much different. They would have known that they were going to come to England and been prepared for the for the climate that they were going to face, and you know, prepared for the challenge. They'll be looking forward to going home with some silver as well, as much as Leeds will be looking forward to lifting it.
Now looking at Leeds, how much of an advantage is it for them to be playing the game at Headingley rather than Elland Road?
Yeah, well, that's home. That's their home, and as much as you know, it was in Leeds playing at Elland Road, it was a different ground, you know, and I remember playing 2005 against the Bulldogs for Leeds. It was nice. It was nice to be in Leeds and have the home support, and we had a big crowd, and knowing that everybody in the crowd was behind us. But it wasn't home. It wasn't our place. And the players can go through their normal rituals and their normal routines on game day that they go through every other week when they do play at Headingley. And you know, the fans will have the comforts of being in where they normally watch the game. So yeah, it'll be a big bonus for Leeds, I think, being at their home ground, their proper home ground.
You mentioned the fact you played in the final. You've also been as an assistant coach and won it. Is it a different experience to do it as a coach rather than a player?
Yeah, different focus. You know, you focus more on the group, whereas as a player, you get to focus on yourself and prepare yourself for what's necessary for the good of the team. But, you know, as a coach, you're trying to tidy up everything and put everything into place for the good of the group, and make sure that everybody's ready to put their piece in for the team and try and get the victory. So yeah, different, but you know, I've been fortunate enough to be on the winning side and both as a player and on the coaching staff, and you know, the joy and the elation is the same for both. They're both special feelings, and you know, you can't deny the joy that you have of being a world champion.
You mentioned the fact that for us it's the focus on Super League. So will the team go through a different preparation, bearing in mind an Australian opposition?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that too much will change, because you know, you can tend to go away from what's strong for you, and you know, you need to go what's good for the team. And obviously, Leeds winning it last year, they've got a formula that works for them. And I don't think too much will change, just because it's a different type of opposition. I think, in some regards, that can be a hindrance for the opposition. You know, both teams are playing against different styles that they don't come up with or come against in their season proper. So, yeah, both teams will still, I think, prepare as best that they can and keep everything as normal as possible.
The tournament as a whole, Leeds seem to like be playing in that trophy as well, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. You know, why wouldn't you? When you win in the grand final, a lot of the players it's mentioned almost instantly as soon as you win the grand final. All right, let's go, let's bring on the Aussies, bring on the Aussies. You know, when you win the grand final at Old Trafford, you've bought a ticket to the World Club Challenge grand final. So, you know, instantly, it's something that the players look forward to.
And those two successes you had, they still hold happy memories for you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, when you win something, you know, whatever it is, when you achieve a goal that you've set out and, you know, you've set a target for and you achieve it, no one can ever take it away from you. No one. I've got more than the medals and everything. I've got memories of the camaraderie and the mates that I worked hard with, and they're the special things about rugby league.
Tell you what, he's whetted my appetite for it. What a fantastic interview.
Yeah, Willie Poacher might be the assistant coach of Warrington these days, but I'm sure you might have an old Leeds top knocking about that I have on Friday, hoping Leeds Rhinos turn over Manly Sea Eagles at Headingley Stadium. Now, what do you think Leeds are going to have to do to beat the Manly Sea Eagles?
Play two teams. No, that's not going to happen, is it? Leeds, they're going to have to control the ball a heck of a lot better than they did against Wigan. They're going to have to actually ask a few more questions. They need to get Robbie Burrow to key on players, because that is what he's dangerous at. I just feel that they didn't give him any opportunity to really run at the defence last week, which is obvious to Wigan, to be honest.
I think I agree with Willie Poacher and what might go against the Manly Sea, because they might be a great attacking team with some big forwards in their pack to really get down the field. But I agree with Willie. I think just the fact they've only come over this week, they haven't got much time to prepare for the British weather for a start and get over the jet lag. I know they'll say there's not a problem with jet lag, but there must be something in it.
In the last 3 or 4 years as well, Australian sides have come across and played a warm-up game, haven't they, which is something that Manly haven't done. And I just think you're kind of looking at it, and it's going to be tough for them. But I do think that they'll have too much in the tank for these Rhinos. That's just about all that we've got time for on this edition of Talking Super League. Please join us next time out, where we'll be giving our thoughts on Round 3. Thank you.